Scale me up, Scotty. Calculate, got me up late. Gotta make another tray for Sunday. Ay, can't wait, not enough bait. Frost on my opponents, gonna call cupcakes. And it's no hate, just facts. There's just no way I'm last. Technically, I'm last. 101 pick, I'm bad. Bad at the bone, ain't mad at the dome. Ain't rather than know the anatomy. Know a value of roses, dandy to know the man. JPAZ, let's go, let's go, let's go.
Welcome to the Dynasty Trade Calculator Podcast, a show dedicated to Dynasty fantasy football trades and player values, with your hosts, John Paul Hurley and Izzy Elkafoss.
Welcome back to the DTC Podcast, your world leader in Dynasty trades, coming to you live from DTC Studios in, what is it, Minneapolis, Minnesota, Izzy, right? We are in Minneapolis. This week, Izzy, guess what we're going to talk about this week on the show?
Devies.
You want to talk about 2022 draft class?
We should. We got to zag when everyone's zigging, you know?
That's a good idea. Everybody's doing mock drafts and covering rookie drafts and talking about rookies. So let's just cover high school prospects.
Perfect.
Let's get ahead of the game a little bit. And then maybe we'll wait 2 years to release this one.
Yes, I like that.
See how close we were. Just kidding. We're going to talk about rookies. Joining me this week, Izzy Elkafoss, already been talking. Needs no introduction, but he is the Pharaoh of Fantasy, in case you were wondering. Mm. So enough boring introducing the co-hosts and the host. By the way, I'm John Paul Hurley. We have a very, very special guest with us today. I'm very excited. So I've mentioned it before, but I am FF Hercules on Twitter. And now we have Thor Nystrom. You can find him on Twitter at Thorku, Thorku. He works for RotoWorld NPC Sports. He's a former FSWA College Sports Writer of the Year and all-around amazing dude. If you don't already follow him on Twitter, I would highly recommend it, at Thorku on Twitter. He spits fire on a daily basis. Thor, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Good to be with you. Super good to be with you.
I'm pretty sure that recently I saw there was a coach that happened to call you out that said he really, really appreciates your content each year?
Yeah, Jay Harbaugh, John's son on the Michigan staff, their running back coach, which was super unexpected on Sunday morning. And it made my day and it made my month. It made my year. He said he really liked my draft content. And sometimes it's like you sort of pinch yourself because you're writing all this stuff on your own. Especially the past couple months here in quarantine, you know, like watching all these prospects tape, studying all of them. You know, I do a lot of reading as well. I look into their advanced numbers, all this kind of stuff. You're just doing it by yourself, you know, and even when you're writing and stuff like that, and you never sort of have a concept of who the reader is. It's sort of a nebulous kind of a thing, but you certainly don't think that like super duper, like famous people or coaches or stuff like that, that they're reading it. Last year I got a message that, Mike Lombardi had messaged Evan Silva at our company to tell him about a typo in my column, which I was like, holy shit, Mike Lombardi reads my column. And then this year, Jay Harbaugh, I was like, holy shit, Jay Harbaugh reads my columns. So yeah, that was really, really cool.
I got to say, you're one of the guys on Twitter that I enjoy watching because it seems like on a month-to-month basis, you achieve new levels. It's continuous. Like, you get different call-outs. Like, I think it was last year you got the Writer of the Year. That was fun to watch. And then you just keep hitting new highs. It's really fun to watch. So thank you for that stuff.
Thanks, man. Yeah, it's been fun. You know, and the job I have right now, it's what I've wanted to do since I was a kid. You know, it's a real pleasure for me being able to do this stuff. You know, like putting together this 500 player board and stuff, and you know, people on Twitter, there's a lot of appreciation for that stuff. They'll say like, you know, thanks so much for doing this for us. And I'm just thinking like, for us, like, I mean, sure, but like, I've wanted to do this since I was a kid. Like everything that I'm doing, it's stuff that back then I was thinking like, why isn't someone doing this? You know, when I was a kid watching the draft, I mean, I'm talking like going back to 7 years old, 8 years old, I would always buy the magazine. You know, like I got, you know, every year you buy these magazines or whatever. But when I was a kid, you'd look in the back, you'd have like the list of best 100 players or whatever. Well, I'd be crossing the names out as I went because I wanted to keep track. Well, the list would always run out, you know, fourth round, maybe fifth round, you know, and there'd be players that weren't on it or whatever. And I would always just think like, why isn't this list 300 players or 400 players or 500 players? And when I got this job, it's like, man, I got the time to research 700 or 800 players and whittle that thing down to 500. So I decided to do it. And I've always loved player comps too. And I thought, well, hell, why not drop a player comp on all 500? You know, yeah. And just, it's just stuff like that, you know?
Did the Indy 500 ever reach out to you on some sort of infringement on their name?
they haven't quite yet. They haven't quite yet. So hopefully they stay away. But I'm willing to lawyer up. As Adam Sandler said in that one recent movie, I am quite the litigious individual.
Now, Thor, I mentioned where they can follow you on Twitter at ThorKoo, but where can our listeners find your work?
They cannot. So yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at ThorKoo. I typically drop links on there. I'm also on RotoWorld on the college football NFL draft section. So you can find all of our stuff on there. I had the Thor 500 up before. I was talking about with the big board. My snap grades are up right now, you know, judging all the teams' draft classes. Best available UDFAs, both in terms of list form and by position. And in the coming weeks, I will have a too early 2021 mock, and I will have a UDFA class rankings, which is another thing. As a kid, I was like, why doesn't anyone judge the UDFA classes? Like, the UDFAs are interesting too. They're people too, you know, and so
they're real.
they're real dudes. And like, you know, we get contributors out of there every single year, you know, and Philip Lindsay. I mean, like, you know, you could go year by year, you know, you get like legit contributors. So I thought, you know, why not rank the UDFAs, especially if I'm going to rank out, you know, 500, 600, 700 guys. It's pretty easy to come up with a UDFA class ranking. So look for that on Roto World in the next couple of weeks too.
My favorite player of all time is a UDFA.
Me too.
Who's that?
Mine's Arian Foster.
Oh,
mine. You'll never guess. My favorite. He's a running back, undrafted free agent, running back. Favorite running back of all time.
Philip Lindsay.
No, that's a good guess. That's probably the.
I know. I think I know what it is.
Izzy knows who it is.
He's blocked on Twitter by this individual, but he's still his favorite.
He blocked me because he thinks I'm being sarcastic about my love for him. So he blocked me.
Leroy Horde.
No, that's a good guess. It's Jonas Gray. And one of my fantasy teams is named after Jonas Gray, the Jonas Gray Phenomenals. So he don't like me. He hate me, actually. I might change my name.
That's crazy. That's too bad. You're probably the only person in America who would legitimately say that he's your favorite player, and he blocked you on Twitter. It's one of the saddest things I've ever heard.
I'm still pretty bummed. It was like 3 years ago and I'm still scarred. Like, I'll carry that one around for the rest of my life. So anyway, Thor, all of this is for the draft, the NFL draft. How did you enjoy yourself? Did you like the draft this year?
I really did. Yeah. You know, heading in, I really thought it was going to be a shit show. I thought that the NFL probably should push it back. I even thought there was a chance like that they were going to push it back like a ways, you know. We were having all the other sporting events get canceled and stuff like that. They decided to go forward with it in this remote format. And I thought that, like I said, I thought there was good. It was going to be a shit show. I thought there was going to be technical difficulties. I thought it was going to be super awkward with Goodell, who everyone hates, in his basement and all this sort of stuff. And as the thing went on, you know, at the beginning, I found Goodell loathsome, as I always do. You know, he was doing his virtue signaling thing and stuff like this. And I'm like, oh, here we go. I'm going to have to spend 3 days with this a-hole. But as we got into Friday night, I was like, am I starting to like Goodell? You know, and then like halfway through Friday night, I'm like, I feel like Goodell's my friend now. And then like on Saturday, I was like, I don't want the draft to end. I like hanging out with Goodell. And then they had other people picking, you know, by that point. And I'm like, I want to go back in with Goodell's basement. Like, I don't want to spend time with these guys. And then I was just like, is this a quarantine thing? Is this a pandemic thing? Like, why do I like Goodell now? Is it Stockholm syndrome? What's going on here? But I'm not sure what it is, but I enjoyed the remote format. I enjoyed getting the shots into the coaches' houses. You know, I mean, us here locally in Minnesota, one of the stars of the telecast was Mike Zimmer's hunting lodge. I mean, that shit was really cool getting to see, Cliff Kingsbury, he had the magazine spread, you know, thing going on. Sean McVay had a similar sort of thing going on. Then you had Dave Gettleman, who seemed to be up in some haunted attic, and he looked like Bane with his, you know, with his mask on. he was just up by himself. You had all the different, you know, people were in all different kinds of different things. Some guys had their kids with them. Some people were just sequestered off by themselves. I thoroughly enjoyed the whole thing. You know, I don't know if we'll ever have another draft like this, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. And kudos to the NFL. It was extremely entertaining.
Yeah, it was fun. I think the only thing that I was annoyed by with Goodell was that he had like a paradigm for how he would announce picks. He would announce the pick, then he would turn around, look at the fans on the TV, and always wave at him as if the fans on the TV can see him, like right through the TV. I was like, Goodell, you got to stop doing this, man. It's driving me nuts. And then I was convinced that John Schneider's kids were making the picks because he kept like they were more excited about him, and it seemed like after a pick was made and they had the cameras in John Schneider's house, their kids would celebrate as if they made the call, you know?
I'm pretty sure John Schneider's kids made the first round pick because I think that one was a mistake.
Oh, John Schneider's kids. Come on.
Speaking of their first round pick. So after the Seahawks took Jordan Brooks, who I found to be like a mid third round linebacker, after they took him, I immediately tweeted out something to the effect of holy shit, that was a bad pick. It's like something like that. Janice Brooks, who I assume is Jordan's mom, about an hour later starts tweeting at me like, who do you think you are? And do you play football, you idiot? And like, you know, all this stuff. And I was like, no, Janice, like I evaluate football prospects. I'm doing my job. Same as your son plays football. Like, hello. Like,
that's kind of funny.
Did she block you on Twitter?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think we're friends now, too, just like me and Goodell.
Are you blocked by Jonas Gray?
No, Jonas loves me. He's coming over for dinner tonight. Yeah,
I'm stealing your handle. Anyway, so this is how we're going to do this. We framed it up a little bit before the podcast started. We were talking about how we want to discuss these rookies. And what we're going to do is use one of our leagues as a format to kind of discuss which rookies were drafted where. In fact, the league that we chose is the Ultimate Dynasty Podcasters League. And it's comprised of podcasters from Dynasty Nerds, Dynasty Happy Hour, DTC Izzy Participates, Dynasty Warzone, Trade Addicts, the FF Gurus. There's just a ton of different podcast hosts that contribute to this league, that compete in this league. So we're going to use this as a platform. We're going to discuss each of the players that were picked where and talk about their landing spots, where they should be picked in rookie draft picks. And maybe just a little bit more context around each one of them, too. So this should be fun. So I'm going to kick it off, and I'm going to let Izzy talk first. Izzy, you had the 101. So if you want to give some context, I know you had some tweets out there, a series of tweets about how you have acquired some of these guys because you took over this orphan, and you wanted to kind of provide some context on this. But maybe talk to me about the 101, who you selected, and what you think about it.
Yeah. I kind of got lucky with the 101. I took over a really bad orphan. And I started kind of blowing it up piece by piece. And I ended up trading, how I got the 101s, I traded Mitch Trubisky, I traded Baker Mayfield for Mitch Trubisky, a 2020 first and a 2021 first from the same guy. And that, I mean, the 2021 first is from the same guy that owned the 2020 first. It's not like it was two different teams' picks. Well, the 2020 first ended up being the 101. So my team was fully projected to be the 101. I tried my best since I didn't even have, I acquired the team without my own 101, or I guess my own first, which we knew was going to be the 101. And I finagled my way out of the 101 and I ended up acquiring the 101. So I kind of got lucky with how everything went down. So I went with Joe Burrow at quarterback. And, you know, the more I thought about it, the more I probably would have gone a different direction. But at the same time, because the league is active. So my whole thought process with first round, with the 101 is usually I would go with value. But the more active your league is, the more inactive your league is, the more likely I'm just going to draft for need in that position. And actually, the quarterback position is not something I needed. And the league is pretty active. So I guess I could trade Burrow, but I probably needed a running back. So I'm a little torn there. But I think Burrow, here's the thing with the entire 2021 class, 2020 class. is that if you look at top to bottom, 101 to 110, you look at Lamb, Judy at the receiver position, you look at the five running backs with Swift and Taylor, Clyde, Akers, Dobbins, and then you look at the two quarterbacks, they all have significant question marks based on their landing spots. So I'm really starting to question the value of these players for a multitude of reasons. Tua with the injuries, Burrow because he's a quarterback, and those are just always hit or miss to begin with. It's really hard to hit quarterbacks, especially the high-end quarterback. So it's usually a very dangerous proposition. And then you look at the running backs. Every single one of these top running backs legitimately could be in a committee situation for the next year, possibly two, maybe even indefinitely. You look at Taylor, he still has company there. So it's not like Taylor's going to go in and just usurp all of the touches. I think Mack is going to have a role. I think Hines is going to have a role. Depending on, we don't know how much work Taylor's going to get. It is a concern. And then you look at Clyde, same thing. And I guess we'll get to all of these as we talk about it, but Clyde has Damian, Dobbins has Ingram, and Lamar Jackson obviously runs a crap ton. You look at Akers, he still has Daryl Henderson, who they drafted in the third the year before, and Malcolm Brown, who was eating into Todd Gurley's work last year, probably because Todd Gurley was hurt. But you don't know what these teams, all of these teams have historically tried to, I guess not historically, but the last couple of years have been trying to alleviate pressure off of one guy by giving it to a committee. So I don't think adding these players, just because we really like them in the fantasy community, I don't necessarily feel confident that all of these guys, or at least some of these guys, will be full-time backs. So I think Burrow right now is probably the safest long-term play, but I don't think that he has the most upside because I think with running backs, they tend to hit right away. So I think with the 101, you're good going a couple different directions in Superflex. I don't hate Burrow being 101, and I don't hate one of the other two running backs going 101, which is Clyde and Jonathan Taylor. What do you guys think?
Well, I think you covered all of the players, so I think we're done here. I think we can probably stop recording, and then we'll produce this one. We'll publish it. Yeah, Thor's done.
Yeah, I was just giving you the idea at the 101. What the issue is that there's like, you could look at all of these guys, and there really isn't anybody that stands out.
I agree, yeah.
As the 101, which is speaks to the depth, but also speaks to the concern at the positions.
So, Thor, how about real specific with Izzy's take there?
Yeah,
so, Joe Burrow talking yeah, about I know what you feel in, like his landing in, spot was like, and if
your
you think
guys
he's
the only
one
I've ever
one
played
spot
like
in
that,
Dynasty
so it's you start the two quarterbacks. I had to adjust to that the first time around. You know, like the increased value of those. In terms of that, I could see that, and I know what Izzy's talking about in terms of the landing spots of the other guys, you know, at the skill positions or whatever. I don't know if in terms of the receivers, I think probably Lamb would be the only guy I'd consider there. And we'll talk about that in a second. I won't hit on the other dudes just right this second. As far as Burrow against Tua for that, what makes Burrow interesting at the next level is he's the best. You saw this at LSU. He's the best. And he's talked about this with reporters and stuff like this. When they send five guys out, he doesn't want three receiving options out. He doesn't want four. He wants five out. He wants minimum protection back there. He wants as many options out there as possible, because what he's really good at is processing things immediately and then getting the ball out, you know, really fast, and also maneuvering around in the pocket. And that's why he gets the Tony Romo thing. He can throw like off platform, maneuver around in there and just fling the ball up, get it on the money. Yeah, I mean, to all three sectors of the field, and stuff like that. And so if everything works out and the Bengals are able to surround him with weapons, you could continue to see sort of those dynamic passing yards. And so in terms of that, I could see it, you know, and obviously they still have AJ Green. They added Higgins in top of the second. I'm not as high on Higgins as some others. I would have preferred that they go with like a guy like Mims there or Chenault. But the one good thing about Higgins, as far as like his, you know, matching his game with Burrow, is Burrow's extremely accurate down the field, and Higgins is one of the better guys in this class down the field. That's just like the thing he does. He's a really big receiver with a huge catch radius, and that's what he did at Clemson. He just went down the field and he caught everything that Lawrence threw down there. He's a little bit limited athletically, but we know that he can get down the field and catch everything, you know, just catch rebounds basically. And then Tyler Boyd, obviously, in the slot. So you already got the three guys. You got Mixon back there. So they'll be able to, you know, to give them five viable options if they want to, you know, sort of do their offense that way. I would have thought maybe about Tua or Clyde. Clyde's the best receiving back in this class, and I think he's just going to catch so many balls that it's going to be ridiculous. And I think he's going to score a lot of touchdowns too in that offense. And you go back to like when Mahomes was at Texas Tech, he threw the ball to running backs a ton. I mean, he likes to do that. And I think with Clyde back there, he's one of the most skilled, you know, skilled receiving backs that we've had in the past few classes as well. I think his game matches up really well with Mahomes's. So I might have thought that way. And then as far as Tua, as long as Tua's hip is sound, I think he's going to be just a tremendous fantasy player, because last year you didn't get to see it as much because he was compromised basically all year. At the beginning of the season, it was two high ankle sprains, and then he had the hip thing. And so he was basically confined in the pocket all season. Even so, he had a 33-3 TDINT ratio and almost completed three-fourths of his passes. He almost had 75%, even though he couldn't even like step into throws and like stuff like that. But you go like back before, you know, like to his, you know, sophomore season and stuff when he was healthy at the beginning of that season, he scrambles around a lot more. Mobility is more a part of his game when he's healthy. And when Lane Kiffin, who was Alabama's like his recruiting coach at the time, went out to Hawaii to watch Tua to recruit him to Alabama, he comped him to Steve Young, which is the comp that I used in my column. And that, because of a part of that, Tua is extremely, extremely accurate as well, just like Burrow to all three sectors. But he's also very, very mobile when healthy. So that might be a, you know, an element of his game in the NFL that Burrow's, you know, you don't get quite as much. So just a couple other thoughts.
Nice. I always get a little giddy when somebody comps a left-handed quarterback with another left-handed quarterback. I almost feel like that's becoming a prerequisite just because of the way that they roll out of the pocket and which sides of the field they're strong on and stuff like that.
And Tua's the only left-handed quarterback in the NFL now, I believe. I think we only have one. He will be the only one. Unless I'm forgetting someone.
Oh yeah, starter.
Is there another one?
I can't think of anyone else. Izzy, can you think of anyone else? I can't myself.
No.
And who doesn't love left-handed quarterbacks? We need more.
I mean, I'm convinced that Trubisky is left-handed. He just hasn't discovered it yet.
Yeah.
there's something wrong with Trubisky.
He's like the Zoolander of NFL quarterbacks, right? He just can't. He's got the blue steel.
He truly is true 12. Here comes the breakout year.
That's something Bears fans have said every year for 3 years now.
I'm joking, of course, Bears fans. That's a lost cause.
Yeah, it is. So I'm gonna throw it right back at you. So at the 102, Dynasty Yak was on the clock and he selected Jonathan Taylor. How do you feel about Jonathan Taylor's landing spot and being selected at the 102 spot there?
Is that Yak with a K or a C?
Yak with a C.
Okay.
That's a good question though. Clarifying question.
I love Taylor's game. I ranked him as the number one running back overall. Just in terms of pure being a pure runner, he's the best in this class by margin. You're not going to get as many receiving stats for him, though. You know, so people in, like, depending on the format you're in, if you're not in a PPR league, I would absolutely prioritize getting Taylor because I think he's going to be one of the better pure runners in the NFL in short order as well. But the receiving aspect of his game, he's got work to do, and it's not really his fault. I would say as well, you know, people sort of shit on him about this aspect of his game, but when he went to Wisconsin his first 2 years, this is a guy who ran for over 6,000 yards in 3 years. He was only there for 3 years, averaged over 2,000 yards per season. His first two seasons, they basically gave him the ball on first and second down every single time. On third down, they had to take him out. You know, he's an 18, 19-year-old kid. You can't give him the ball every single time. And Wisconsin, they don't have an offense like Ohio State or, you know, some of these other spread teams, whatever, get him in space. It was a pro-style confined offense. And defenses realized in short order, we got to gear up to stop Jonathan Taylor. he's the singular talent on that offense. And so that's what they did. This past season, I think probably Jonathan Taylor went into the coaches and said, hey guys, everyone, all the evaluators are saying that I can't catch the ball and stuff like this. Like, you guys have to throw me the ball this year. Because before, like I said, it wasn't just that he wasn't getting receptions. They actually just didn't play him on third downs. Like if you look at like his usage, he just wasn't on the field. But last year, his receptions were up significantly. But he still dropped the ball a bit, and he's still not natural at that. So he's going to have to work at it. But if you look at some of these other guys who he has some similarities of their game to, like, for instance, Leonard Fournette coming out of LSU, people, it was the same thing of like, he can't catch. But last year he had a bunch of catches. You know, it's not to say that like he's some kind of fabulous receiving back, but I just want to make that point that like, he could, develop, at least to be a viable receiver. But as far as him going to the Colts, like I think you're going to see a guy who again becomes one of the upper echelon, just pure runners in the league very quickly. So I just from a fantasy perspective, I think I would take Clyde above him again, as long as your league waits for receptions. But it's hard to argue against Taylor just because he's such a good player and prospect.
That's a good point. I think that's a compelling topic that you brought up too, where it's like the way that those running backs are like not used in the college offenses during passing situations, just because it's not asked of them. And like, it's not that they can't do it. It's just that they've never been asked to do it. So I thought Izzy last year talked a lot about Leonard Fournette's pass catching ability. We just haven't seen it. Now we have. So I'm going to be curious to see how that works with Jonathan Taylor as well, I think.
Yeah. And their situation, his situation is similar to what Nick Chubb faced coming into the league. And obviously with Hunt now in the situation with him, it's kind of mucked things up. But had Hunt not kicked that woman, and he'd still be in KC, and who knows what Chubb would be dealt with right now. Maybe just it'd just be him. And that's the situation that Jonathan Taylor's gonna have to work his way out of, which is the Mac situation, where the situation for Chubb was tempered. I think the same thing for Taylor year one will be tempered as well. And then we see what the upside will be once Mac is gone, because they're obviously not going to retain Mac next year. So Mac is going to hit the market. So Jonathan Taylor wheels up in 2021. So the thing with Jonathan Taylor and what you do at 102 is you really have to go with Clyde, I think, is also going to split carry. So it's really down to Clyde and Jonathan Taylor. You can make a case for two as well if you need a quarterback. And you need to decide for yourself whether you want to go with the open air offense where you're going to get a lot of touches via receptions and it's going to be split with Damian Williams, or do you want a lot of the grinded out yards on the ground where you're not going to get as many receptions, even though Phillip Rivers loves throwing to his running backs because he can't throw 10 yards down the field. And then you have a very, very elite offensive line. I think Indy has the best pure running game in the NFL, parallel to Baltimore. The only reason I think Baltimore is as elite as it is because Lamar Jackson takes it to that next level. But he also eats from the production of the running backs, whereas Phillip Rivers isn't doing that, and you're getting an elite offensive line, a run-minded team with a good defense. So you're going to be in positive game scripts, and he's going to get a lot of opportunities on the ground. It really all depends on Marlon Mack, who I think is a better running back than A, he gets credit for, and B, I think he's better than Damian Williams. So I feel like Clyde should have more opportunity year one, but I think Jonathan Taylor has a better long-term pure situation to be the guy by himself in 2021, where I think Clyde will always have some sort of committee approach to him. I think Andy Reid has said that he likes utilizing multiple running backs at this point. And the one big thing, I don't know if you guys saw this, but Pat Mahomes was actually the reason why the Kansas City Chiefs drafted Clyde. And it was actually one of the reasons why we did a startup early, and I drafted the 101 at the 303 spot, which is a lot later than I thought it would go. And I actually drafted Clyde over Jonathan Taylor. And the reason why is Veach, the GM of the Chiefs, had texted Pat Mahomes and asked him who he wanted before the draft. And he sent one word, and that was Clyde. So if Pat Mahomes wants Clyde, I'm guessing they're going to utilize him as the primary option. But I still think there's going to be some sort of 70-30 split. And like people have mentioned before, they're really not a run-dominated team. So most of his work's going to come in the receiving game, which obviously holds a premium. But there's pros and cons to both. So I get going Jonathan Taylor and I get going Clyde. And if honestly, in my situation, I'm in a lot of leagues. If I have multiple 102s and Burrow's going 101, I'm taking one of each. I'm just going to I'm going to diversify. I think it's that close.
That's true. And I think Mahomes meant Clyde Drexler, but I mean, he probably should have clarified. You're always pretty good at those vague tweets and posts. Yeah. So you should probably take a lesson from that too.
Yeah.
But coincidentally, the next at the 103 pick was Clyde. We'll just say one word there. Selected by Dynasty Trades HQ. So we could probably provide some additional context on Clyde's landing spot, but I just want to ask you each one question, starting with Izzy. Who has the higher ceiling between Jonathan Taylor and Clyde Edwards?
I'm going to say Jonathan Taylor.
Okay. So overall higher ceiling.
I think because what we do know from an upside perspective, it comes down to pure athleticism. And Jonathan Taylor has the athleticism. He could, even though he's big and seems powerful, I think he could be a little bit more powerful, but his pure athleticism is there, right? So his pure upside is there. If he shows that he can be like Leonard Fournette and catch the ball out of the backfield and they utilize him that way, dude, Jonathan Taylor is going to be a top three running back in the league. Where I don't think Clyde is limited because he doesn't have the explosiveness to his game. So he's death by a thousand cuts, where I think Jonathan Taylor could really just give you explosive chunk plays.
Very good. Thor, what do you think? Who has the higher ceiling?
I think it depends on the format, but if it's a PPR league, I would say Clyde. Izzy said death by a thousand paper cuts, but you got a guy that's going to catch 100 balls. So it's potentially catch 100 balls. So it's sort of like death by 100 receptions, you know. And also, you know, I mean, he might only get 800 rushing yards, maybe, because, you know, maybe that's where he's sort of splitting. But Clyde's going to be on the field every time they throw the ball. You're going to see him in the slot. He can line up out wide, run routes out of the backfield, certainly. And Mahomes is going to throw the ball to him a whole heck of a lot. He's so incredibly skilled. And Izzy's point is totally right about the athleticism difference. I mean, Jonathan Taylor at 5'10", 226, tested in the 90th percentile in Indy. Clyde at 5'7", 207, he was in the 68th percentile. Clyde is extremely, extremely shifty and stuff like that. He's very athletic in that way. The one thing he lacks is straight line speed. You know, he's more of like a 4'6 guy. And so that's the one impediment to his game, but extremely skilled and extremely shifty. And so as far as the receiving stuff goes, I just think he's going to make hay there. And I think he's going to catch just an F ton of balls in that Chiefs offense. And obviously you are already in the NFL's best offense in an ideal circumstance. And as you just said, advocated for by the dude, by football Jesus. So for those reasons, I think I would probably lean that way, even though it's going to look a little bit different than, you know, your sort of traditional stud running back.
I would say the best way to look at this, if you're a listener and you're trying to figure out, okay, well, what the hell? I mean, they disagree. Basically, do you want Alvin Kamara or do you want Zeke Elliott? And that's how you have to look at it. Do you want your fantasy points and your ceiling being Alvin Kamara's ceiling, or do you want it being Zeke ceiling? And as what we saw a couple years ago with Alvin Kamara, he's got a sky high ceiling, especially if he gets the touchdowns. And with Zeke, we saw what his ceiling could be if they utilize him in the passing game. So, and right now you can go either way. I mean, like Thor was saying, 800 yards for Clyde is possible, just like it was for Kamara. You might not get the carries, but you're going to get 100 balls thrown your way. So I think that's just, how do you want your eggs? Do you want it scrambled or do you want an omelet?
I want them poached.
Okay, you want poached eggs. That's coming up this morning.
Thor, how do you like your eggs?
I was going to say Eggs Benedict just to be contrarian.
There you go. Thor's on the train with me. That's poached, by the way. There we go. Same page right there. So that's a pretty good start. That's picks 1 through 3 coming in at 104. Again, this is a super flex league. Tua, and I want to be very, very careful with how I pronounce his last name because there's a right way to do it and a wrong way to do it.
I got you.
Okay. I think Thor's got it. Izzy, do you got it?
I believe I do.
All right, Tagovailoa.
Yep, Tua Tagovailoa. It's just like saying tongue at the beginning. So I think that a lot of people throughout the industry are going to avoid saying his last name just because he might be the most confusing name in the class, right? At this point?
Yeah, I think his name is set enough to where people enjoy saying, it's actually fun to say.
Kind of like, do you remember Shimanga Byaka Batuka?
Oh, yes, one of my favorites.
Oh, he was the best.
One of my favorites.
I could say that all day long and nothing else.
one of my team names is named after him. Huge Michigan. I'm a huge Wolverines fan, and it's a greatest bust league, basically Bustapalooza. And I went with Tishmanga Byaka Batuka as mine.
Was Byaka Batuka, like, he started out the expansion team, right, with Panthers?
Yeah, Panthers,
he was on the first season.
And he got hurt.
I think so.
Yep.
I think the toughest name in this class was is Noah Igbinogheni.
Oh, that's true. Forgot. Yep, I forgot about the tight end.
I don't even know. I don't even know how to say it. I just call him Albert O. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. So I just go Albert O.
Yeah, that's true. There's some confusing one. I guess there's a couple of them. I don't know how to say.
Those Nigerian names get tough.
Is it Cam Akers? I don't know how to say Cam.
Yeah. David Akers.
Coming in at 104, drafted by a team named Film Nerds. Is that, I'm assuming that's Dynasty Nerds, right?
Film Nerds, yeah.
Tua Tagovailoa, Izzy, starting with you. Talk to me about Tua's landing spot. Miami, not so promising, I think, in comparison with everybody thought he's going to land with the Chargers. But talk about Tua landing with the Dolphins.
No, I think it's right. I think Tua, there was about 12 months of Tua to Dolphins. And then Dolphins started winning games. And then it was like, oh, man, the Dolphins aren't going to get him. And then Burrow started ascending. Tua gets hurt. And then now it's, well, where's Tua going to go? And then Tua gets bad news, and he's going to fall out of the top 5. Herbert's going to jump him. So I'd say most of the time, it was going to be Miami. I think 70% of the way, it's been Miami. Now, here's the interesting thing. Tua, a healthy Tua, is going 101. Right? Maybe 102, depending on how excited people get about Burrow. Right? Now he's checked in and he's healthy. And the only reports that we've had that he's unhealthy is the potential smokescreen of a couple of teams took him off the draft board and he didn't pass the physical. I think that is still lingering in the dynasty community because I think without that and he has 100% hip recovery, I think he's the 102. So
very nice.
I have a hard time with writing him off at the 102 or 103. Doesn't work as well. But you're looking at him at 104, and I think he's an absolute steal. I think this draft right now is 4 deep. I think that there's another tier that we'll get to here in a second. But I think if you're at 104, it is actually a phenomenal spot to be in. Because you don't necessarily have to worry about who you're going to draft. You probably have a better team to begin with because you're just not a bottom feeder. And you potentially get the most upside at the position. Like Tua could be what we're seeing the ascension of Kyler Murray. We see Kyler Murray now as a QB4 in Dynasty, maybe even QB3. I think he might have passed Deshaun Watson for QB3, and I get it. He's got pieces around him now, and people are excited about Hopkins and so on and so forth. But it's just that dual threat, and Burrow is no slouch. I think Burrow can actually move, and we saw a little bit of that. But Tua just has that next level to his game. So I actually don't hate the spot at 104, and I think Tua's a great pick.
Yep, I agree with you, too. I think going into rookie drafts or going into the NFL draft, there were a clear-cut 3 guys for me, and Clyde landing in Kansas City made it a clear-cut 4 guys. And I think any one of those guys, you could make a case for the 101. So you're right. 104 is a very powerful spot. There's not as much thinking involved, and it's a pretty safe spot to be. So, Thor, what do you think about Tua? I think I heard you maybe saying that you could make a case for Tua ahead of Joe Burrow. even at this point. But talk to me about what you think about him.
Yeah, I would say he'd be a steal at the fourth pick. For me, latest would be three. I would take him for sure over Taylor. I think, you know, in a format like this, you know, I agree with what a lot of y'all are saying. I think, like, you know, him against Burrow, if you're looking at it like that, you know, when I was looking at it from a draft perspective, I think that those guys are very close, you know, and for me, just sort of the tiebreaker stuff had to do with like the hip stuff and stuff like that. But I think that they're much closer as prospects than sort of that was, you know, talked about, or that the general public was led to believe, you know, and, you know, you just look at their situations. Maybe Burrow's going into a slightly better situation. And obviously Burrow's healthy and he was also able to play a full season last year. So maybe he starts out a little bit quicker and stuff like that. Miami's rebuild is sort of going to be there's going to be more totality to that. And stuff like that. They're going to have more new players, stuff like that. But you know, like we were talking about, there's a more mobile element to Tua's game. So maybe you have sort of a 1 year reset, both with the Dolphins and with Tua himself. You know, they're not going to rush him back if he's not fully healthy, but you know, we got this pandemic stuff anyway, you know, and I don't know how much you guys talk about that, like with the dynasty and like stuff like that, but like we might not even have a season this year. And so like, you know, as far as like stuff with like Tua and stuff like that, I don't know how much I'd bake in is stuff like that with the health in year one. I just think, you know, in terms of his upside, I think that that's a bit higher than Burrow's, but obviously there's more of a risk profile there. So, but at the third spot, or, you know, at the fourth spot, I just think that that's a slam dunk pick, obvious pick.
Yeah, I totally agree. Izzy, any final notes to add with Tua before we move on to the 105?
No, I think it'll come down to what Miami surrounds him with. And I think they did a good job in this draft of just starting to piece together a future for Miami.
I agree. For first round offensive lineman, I think they did a good job at providing some supporting cast to start because they literally needed everything. So I'm glad to see that they addressed offense quite a bit early in the draft. So moving on, 105 drafted by Dynasty Command Center, Justin Herbert, the new Chargers quarterback. A lot of people believe that Tyrod Taylor will probably start the season as the starter, if to Thor's point that we even have a regular season, but I think we will. But so Izzy, talk to me about what you think about Justin Herbert and his landing spot and being drafted at the 105 in this league.
Yeah, this is a boomer bust. I don't think Justin Herbert will. I think Justin Herbert will either be really good or really bad at the next level. I just don't see a situation where he comes in and he's okay. I don't know. I just get that feeling like he's just boomer bust to me. And I think at 105, I think you're fair there. I think it's fair to do that in this format. I think you can go Akers, Dobbins, or Herbert. So I have no issue with him at 105 at all.
I agree. Thor, what are your thoughts about Herbert? I'm really curious about this one because he's I'm seeing a lot of indifference with him as a prospect.
I think this is a good pick. I don't see as much of a risk profile there as maybe Izzy or maybe some other guys who evaluated him. Because I see who I comped him to is Josh Allen plus. You know, like when Josh Allen came out of Wyoming, he had these acute strengths to his game and he had these acute weaknesses. Herbert is much the same, only his weaknesses, even though they're similar to Allen's, they're not as acute. You know, it has stuff to do with like accuracy, locking onto his first read, pocket feel, stuff like that. Excuse me. But those things aren't as bad as Allen's were, not nearly as bad, really. But you have like the same stuff in terms of like the enormous frame, the awesome athleticism, like Herbert tested, I think 90th percentile plus in terms of athleticism and stuff like that. And you also have the bazooka. And so he's going to have to work on some of the stuff, mostly like in the intermediate sector and stuff like that. Just because of how easy we saw, Allen is a starter and that's been a fine pick for Buffalo. And I know that Herbert's a better player than he is. So I think that that's the floor. A better Josh Allen's the floor. And then the ceiling just sort of goes up from there. I don't know if he can be a superstar though, because he does, like, you look at a guy like Tua and Burrow, they sort of have that touch of genius to them where they see things that other guys don't, or they'll try to fit things through windows where, you know, it sort of drops your jaw. Herbert has the arm strength to drop your jaw, but he doesn't have that sort of vision. you know, like to do other stuff like that. Sometimes he drops your job by making a really stupid decision. But you know, stuff like that. But one thing I'll say about him from a fantasy perspective that I don't think we saw as much at Oregon that we're going to see more in the NFL, I think, is running. You know, he wasn't done a lot of favors by the Oregon staff, where I think his game, it's going to be vertical and horizontal, you know, where he can push the defense way back because he can uncork at 75 yards, no problem. But he should also be allowed to be stressing the defense horizontally as well. And at Oregon, they had him doing a lot of short passes, screen passes, and a lot of stuff in the intermediate area. And sometimes Herbert would try to like drive the ball in, or sometimes he'd have concentration issues and he'd miss easy throws, or the defense would blitz him and he'd sort of panic, and you'd see stuff like this. And the other thing was his supporting cast sucked. Like if you look at Herbert's like receivers and his running backs the past few years, they pale in comparison to what Tua and Herbert were working with. So I do see his ceiling as a step below the other two guys for the reasons that I just explained, but the tools are there. I think to become a really, really solid fantasy quarterback. So, you know, at this spot, if you're going to start, if you're in a format where you're starting two quarterbacks, I think at the five spot, that makes a lot of sense to me.
Who are you comping Herbert with as far as the other veterans right now?
Josh Allen plus. I just think he's a better Josh Allen. I think he's Josh Allen who's a better thrower. I think it's about the same thing as a runner. It's the same body. It's the same athleticism. It's the same arm strength. It's just that that Herbert has more accuracy. He has more touch. He has more feel. I just think that's what it is.
Wow. Okay. That'll be
yeah,
cool.
I think he's less of an athlete than Josh. I think Josh Allen's running makes him a viable starting quarterback. I think if Josh Allen wasn't as athletic as he is, he wouldn't thrive in the league, or at least be as successful as he is. So, I mean, I think Josh Allen's fine. I think you can say Carson Wentz in the same, like, I think Carson Wentz is underrated athletically as well. So somewhere, I don't disagree. I think it's somewhere in that range.
Yeah, Wentz is just softer. He always breaks bones when he steps in front of the line of scrimmage, but that's neither here nor there. Breaks bones, tears tendons. So that's Justin Herbert at the 105. 106, this is one of Izzy's favorite prospects going all the way back to probably high school, right? Not your high school, but his high school. Drafted at 106 by Dynasty Happy Hour. I believe this is Tyler Guenther. Cam Akers, and he lands with the Rammies. So I liked the landing spot. I know that the Rams have a lot of, they're kind of like a Swiss cheese offensive line. But just the level of competition that he's got back there, he's one of the only running backs that was drafted early in the draft that doesn't have very much competition. But so I like the situation, but I want to hear what Izzy thinks about this one.
Yeah, so Cam, little known secret, which is starting to come out a little bit. So Cam is actually my favorite running back in the class because I think, in my opinion, he's the most well-rounded, and he's got the athleticism to boot. So if we're talking about pure upside, I think Cam Akers is that guy. I think DeAndre Swift is up there as well, but I think the difference between those two is, I don't know if Cam Swift he's never gotten the opportunity to be the guy by himself, and he goes to a really unfortunate situation, in my opinion. But I'll stick with Akers for a second. I love Akers. I actually don't like the landing spot. Now, and I don't like the landing spot because the Rams are they're equity broke. They don't have equity to be bolstering offensive line. They could be they're actually heading in a downward trajectory, and I don't see when they could fix their problems. And every single one of the running backs last year struggled behind that offensive line. Now, what's nice about Cam Akers, and the reason why I like him so much, is he was successful behind one of the worst offenses in college football, especially at a Power Five.
So like when you're talking about,
he's used to playing behind garbage. It actually was rated. Thor might know this better. Their offensive line was rated, I want to say, bottom 15 or 20 in the entire college football. And you might know better, Thor. But I believe that's what I saw.
And it wasn't just last year, by the way. So as a true freshman, Florida State ranked 130th out of 130 FBS teams, not just in the Power Five, in Football Outsiders line yards per carry stat. So the worst run blocking team in the entire nation, worse than UL Monroe and everything like that. The next season, his sophomore season, they were 121. So that season they were bottom 10. And then last season, they were 127th in Pro Football Focus's run blocking grades. What I was talking about in my column is it's not just like last season. If you look at like the last decade or two, you could make a legitimate argument that Cam Akers comes into the NFL having run behind the worst trio of offensive lines of any prospect we've seen relative to the competition that they were facing. I mean, G5 guys, D2 guys. I mean, like, his lines were getting caved in. And when I read other people's prospect reports that, you know, that kept like bashing him for being like tentative and stuff like that, it's like, well, if you were asked a question that had no answer, are you assured of yourself? Every time there's three guys in his face right after he's handed the ball, of course you're going to be tentative. There's nothing to do. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so, I mean, yes, you know, it's going to be different in the NFL. You'd like to think, I mean, Izzy was saying, the Rams have a poor offensive line as well, but relative to the league, they're not that bad. I mean, like, you know, FSU had like a D1 AA offensive line and they're going up against Clemson. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's not fair for Cam Akers.
And I feel like, did Cam take it pretty well too, Izzy? Do you guys remember if he was frustrated with his line? Because I never really heard much of a peep out of him.
No, and that's
he's a good teammate.
Yeah, he's always been positive. He's got good rave reviews from his coaches, and
he's never
come out publicly bashed anybody. And obviously, this is a guy that was the number one running back coming out of high school a few years ago. So he's got the high school pedigree. And like Thor was talking about his tentativeness. That's really the biggest concern. But we've also seen that take players out of the league if they can't overcome that. We see it at the quarterback position all the time. We see it at the running back position all the time. Look at Trent Richardson. He couldn't get out of his own way, you know? So, and I don't think that's going to be an issue with Cam as much, because he was successful for three seasons in college. And this is relative to the offense. I have no issue with drafting Cam Akers at 106, kind of bringing back to the point. And he is my favorite running back of this class. I don't love the landing spot, but he still is my 103. If you're talking about one quarterback leagues, and he is my 105. If we're talking about super flex leagues, I have him and Herbert pretty close, but I'd rather take Cam Akers just because. With the quarterback position, there's just way more time you have to wait for them to really explode. And two, I think Cam Akers is going to get first crack, and that could really up his value.
I'd like to make a couple more points, contextual points about Akers, if I could.
Yeah.
2018, that was the year where he really struggled, Akers did. It wasn't just that his offensive line was shitty. He suffered at this nagging ankle injury in camp, and he played through it all season. You know, so going back to like the tentative thing, he was playing on a gimpy wheel, played through it, you know, without bitching about it either. So he's behind this terrible offensive line with a gimpy wheel, plays through it. So that's one thing. The other thing I'd like to say is he played with this revolving door of coaches. He had Jimbo as head coaches, Jimbo Fisher, Willie Taggart, Odell Haggins. As offensive coordinators, Lawrence Dossie, Randy Sanders, Walt Bell, Kendall Briles. And then here were his quarterbacks. These are the guys keeping pressure off of him. DeAndre Francois, James Blackman, Alex Hornibrook. So you just had defenses keying on him with these terrible offensive lines. I mean, you see why this happened. This was not a Cam Akers thing. This was a contextual thing. This was the stuff around him. The other thing I'll say is, in high school, he was like a wildcat quarterback kind of a guy. Like, he was not a pure running back in high school. He was a quarterback. And so he was an awesome athlete, and he was recruited as a running back by everybody. That's what we knew he was going to play. But, he's still learning that position. He came right into Florida State, and even playing behind the worst run-blocking unit in the nation as a true freshman in 2017, he was awesome. That's why we were talking about him as a potential first-round pick, you know, right from the start in 2017, because he was just a fabulous player. He's a really good receiver. He's got all these different skills that Izzy was talking about as a runner. All the athleticism is there. He runs with power. He's going to put his shoulder down, you know, try to finish people, fight for extra yards, like all that different stuff. And you also have some trick play potential there because he can throw the ball just a little bit. So I agree on all that stuff with the upside. And like you guys were saying, like there's not as much competition, you know, in that backfield as there is with some of the other guys, you know, I'm sure that we'll talk about here in a bit.
Absolutely. One of those other guys was drafted at 107 by Film Nerds once again. J.K. Dobbins. This one I was a little bit more surprised about. He actually lost a little bit of a couple spots probably in rookie drafts with his landing spot. But Thor, I'll let you start right away with J.K. Dobbins. It seems like you were rolling there. So talk to me about Dobbins.
Yeah, I wasn't as high on Dobbins as some other folks in my industry. Dobbins was ranked as RB1 by a lot of guys that I really respect out there. I've had him as RB5 going back as early as when I first put out my rankings. I had Cam Akers above him. My issue with Dobbins is I never saw, and I'm just talking about, but I never saw the superstar upside that some other people saw with him. I didn't see the superstar athleticism. I didn't see the superstar running ability. And I didn't see the superstar receiving ability either. 2018, Dobbins is playing with Dwayne Haskins and scary Terry McLaurin, like in that offense. He had a hard time putting away Mike Weber, like in a timeshare. You know, it was, I mean, he had more carries, but it wasn't by a ton. And Weber averaged more yards per touch by like a sort of a decent margin. Dobbins did not look good that year. He just sort of ran sluggish and lazy. And to the point where like Ohio State had to throw the ball to win, you know, it became like this pass, pass, pass kind of a team. And then last year, Dobbins goes off, you know, he had a ton of rushing yards or whatever. But that system, the changes that they made, it really benefited his game where it became way more spaced out with Justin Fields. You had a dual threat quarterback the defenses were always scared of. And so like they were able to put Dobbins in these wide open spaces, and he was one of the nation's leaders in like 10 plus yard carries, 20 plus yard carries. But I'm not sure if that means that he's like this crazy, crazy explosive guy, or if that just means he was in one of the most beneficial offenses for any running back to be in, where you're next to, I mean, you talk about sort of the opposite scenario to Akers. If Cam Akers had been at Ohio State last year, he probably would have been in the top five of Heisman voting. You know, I just think that's what it is. And then as far as receiving, people used to talk about Dobbins as being like this super like dynamic, like, you know, he could do all this different stuff and he's so skilled and he's such a good receiver. I never saw that. I didn't see it on film and I didn't see it in his advanced numbers either. One thing he does do is he lined up everywhere at Ohio State. You know, they have an offense where they'll line him up in the slot. They line him up all wide, you know, different stuff like that. And he'll run his routes, but he didn't do any damage as a receiver. Like when he would catch the ball, he'd typically be down right away, you know, kind of a thing. And it was usually just as an outlet out of the backfield. He doesn't look as natural as a receiver. It's just kind of the thing where he just sort of lassos the ball in and then he turns around. Now he's sort of looking around. And then he gets hit. He's hit and he's down. He breaks a lot of tackles as a running back. He doesn't really break any as a receiver. So it's just sort of the opposite thing. And if you look at his PFF receiving numbers over the course of his career, they're well below his peers. He just wasn't that great of a receiving back at Ohio State, even though he played with these really, really good quarterbacks. Again, it's not like he was playing with James Blackman and DeAndre Francois and the legend of Alex Hornibrook. I mean, he was playing with legitimate NFL quarterbacks the entire time. So I'm a bit lower on Dobbins. I just never saw it with him as much as some of these other guys. I still ranked him as the fifth running back in the class. I'm not trying to shit on him. You know, he's going to be a starter in Baltimore. He's going to an advantageous situation being next to you talk about going next to a dual threat quarterback. You know, I talked about him being a situation that's good for JK is being next to a dual threat quarterback in Fields that played his game up. Well, now he's going to go to one of the great ones of all time. So I think that's going to benefit him. He's clearly a guy who's better if you can facilitate space for him, but he's not one of those singular talent guys. And I think what Izzy was talking about before about like the ceiling of Cam Akers, guys like that, if everything breaks for them, they're guys where they don't need situations. They can sort of create their own, you know, sort of a thing, singular talents. But J.K. Dobbins is a guy that for me, I think he needs the context around him to play his game up. That's how I see him.
There you go. Yeah, I was kind of bummed when JK got drafted because I thought that Justice Hill was a sneaky buy this offseason, and I didn't anticipate Baltimore spending an early draft pick on a running back, but they did, and they got a dynamic one. Izzy, what are your thoughts on J.K. Dobbins?
Yeah, I share similar sentiments to Thor. I also had him as my fifth rated running back, and I've never been a huge J.K. Dobbins fan for a lot of the things that Thor mentioned. I just don't see it. But I will say I like the landing spot, and I like it a lot. I think if you look at these five running backs for 2021, I think this is the second best running back situation. Mark Ingram is going to be a pain in the ass for the first year. I think J.K. Dobbins is a fantastic buy sometime during the season because I think 2021 will be his year, and he'll likely be the main back. So, you know, Thor mentioned a lot of it, so I won't get into it. I just think J.K. Dobbins, from a talent perspective, is a tier below the top three, in my opinion, which is Taylor, Akers, and Swift. He's in the Clyde tier for pure talent. Obviously, they're so different between Clyde and Dobbins from a talent perspective and what they actually bring. But I love the Baltimore situation in 2021.
I was just going to ask you, too, and I'll ask Thor in a moment as well, but where did you have Clyde ranked in your running back rankings pre-draft?
So I have Akers, Swift, Taylor. Might have been Dobbins, then Clyde. Dobbins and Clyde were interchangeable.
That's kind of what I thought. They kind of seemed like they profiled similarly, but Clyde obviously got the better of the two landing spots, it seems, but
yes,
draft pedigree.
Yeah, so it was a toss-up between, I want to say, it was basically tier one and tier two, which is tier one was the first three that I mentioned, and then tier two was Clyde and Dobbins, and I think both had good landing spots, but I think Clyde year one has the best landing spot.
And Thor, before I moved on to the 108 here, where did you have Clyde Edwards-Helaire ranked in your pre-draft rankings?
Running back three, and very close to Swift, who I had two, very, very close.
Nice. You were on Clyde early on. That's pretty cool, actually.
Love his game.
So moving on, Dynasty Happy Hours on the clock at 108. We selected DeAndre Swift, and we talked a little bit about him earlier just with his landing spot. Izzy, could you continue your thought when you were talking about DeAndre Swift landing in Detroit spot? I know you wanted to pause on that and come back when the pick was taken.
Dude, yeah, I like Swift. Not getting a full workload at Georgia, just kind of, and I get it, Georgia's got some good running backs, they always do. I worry about two things. I think out of the top five running backs that got drafted, Kerryon Johnson's the best running back that is going to still be on one of those five teams. Two, I don't think the Detroit Lions are good, and I don't think they'll ever be good. So you're not going to get a lot of really good situations for Swift. And then lastly, I think Matt Patricia coming from the Bill Belichick tree scares the hell out of me from a usage perspective. So I see Swift being the lead in a committee with Kerryon. I just don't see, I think the upside is there from a talent perspective. I think he's hella talented. I just don't see the upside there based on the situation and the landing spot. So he takes a hit for me out of the top five guys. He's actually running back five now because of the landing spot. Kerryon, Matt Patricia, and the Lions just aren't an elite running back program right now.
Yeah, makes sense. Thor, what are your thoughts? DeAndre Swift's landing spots, his prospect, everything.
I agree with a lot of what Izzy said. I didn't love the Lions draft, and this pick was a part of the reason why I didn't get it. I didn't get it at all. It's a premium pick. First of all, I rarely advocate for using a premium pick on a running back. That the Kansas City one, at least just situationally, yeah, because of the offense that they have, which is sort of something unlike we've ever seen before. And Clyde, he has this very particular, he's like Liam Meesum and Taken, and he's got this very particular set of skills. Like, you know,
he'll kill you in certain areas, right?
Exactly. He's counting the footsteps or whatever, like, you know, and his daughter's in the trunk.
That's
like,
awesome.
That whole thing, like, I understand that part of it. But like with the Lions, like you got Kerryon and you also have all these other holes. And there were so many good prospects on the board at the time. I just didn't understand using a premium pick on a, excuse me, on a running back at that point. So, and then like, you know, Izzy was saying, just as far as like a fantasy perspective, the good part about it for Swift, just as a player, is that, I mean, he's split carries for most of his career, you know, and he's gotten dinged up as well at Georgia. Like, we've never really seen him take over a full workload, like over an entire season. And so I think for him, what's good about it is he and Kerryon can play off of each other. That might keep Swift fresh, you know, and he can do the stuff he's good at. Kerryon can do the stuff that he's good at. But, you know, for fantasy players, it's just not the best situation, I feel like, particularly in year one. I didn't really understand the pick, and I like the other running backs from a fantasy perspective more because of that.
I think I liked the pick a little bit more than you guys do, and here's one of the reasons why. I was joking with this about with Izzy earlier on, but guess how many total games Kerryon Johnson has started in his first two seasons as a pro.
Yeah, it's probably, I'm going to say 19.
It's 14. So he's...
Well,
he's
how many games has he played?
He's played 18 games. He started 14 games. So he's less of a Kerryon Johnson and more of a carry-off Johnson. He's been riddled with injuries. I think Detroit wants a little bit more consistency with their running back squad. And I agree with you guys. I think the landing spot is not good from a fantasy perspective, but I think the draft pick made more sense to me, knowing that they want to get more consistency out of that position because they just haven't had it for... When's the last time they had a consistent like running game, you know? So I feel like that's Barry the reason Sanders. For the pick. Yeah, maybe Barry Sanders. It's sad. Or like one of the nine running backs.
Reggie Bush had a 1,000-yard season for him, I thought.
He had a 1,000-yard season, yeah. So that might have been the last time in a season they had a consistent running game. Or maybe one of the nine running backs they brought over from Denver.
Actually, no. It's not Reggie. Because I think during Stafford's reign, they've never had a 1,000-yard running back.
That's pretty sad.
Yeah. But yeah. Anyways, yeah, I think if Kerryon gets hurt, yeah, then Swift is pure gold. It's likely. But it's nice is that I think from an offensive perspective, like you were saying, Hurley, like these two guys are good at everything. I think Swift is better than Kerryon overall, but they're both really good at everything. So no matter who's on the field, which is atypical for an offense, usually you have a grinder and a satellite back. These are two guys that can do both, and they can both do it both well. So when they're on the field, you don't show your hand. So from a strategy perspective, I think it's really good, and it keeps them fresh and the whole thing. So I kind of get it. I just don't think Detroit's in a, like Thor was saying, this is a luxury. They have so many holes that you don't need to fix your running back position. That's not your big problem. Your big problem is defense, and I guess they've really been helping the offensive line, but it's still not there. They just needed some defensive help.
Yeah, everywhere else besides running back.
But yeah.
And that's a good point, too. I think Walter Football didn't have running back listed as a top three or even four need for the Lions, and yet they spent an early draft pick on him. So, but I think they got a good player. We'll see if this is one of those cases where the cream rises to the top or not. You know, even though Kerryon's talented, we'll see if Swift can overtake or Kerryon goes out with an injury or whatever. So drafted at the 109 spot by Film Nerds. Jalen Reagor. I'm going to start with Thor in this one because this is the first wide receiver prospect in this draft that we get to evaluate on the podcast. So, Thor, what are your thoughts around Jalen Reagor?
And let's try to rip through these now because we're out of like the big meat and potatoes of it. Yeah. Now we're getting to the
final four picks lightning round.
Yeah, just rip through it.
Well, let's call it the Thor lightning round.
I like Reagor a lot, although if I don't know why you, maybe you guys can explain it to me. I don't know why you would take him over CeeDee Lamb here, but I like the kid. I like him a lot. He's going to level up, you know, after being at TCU. His quarterback situation was an abomination the past couple of years. It was sort of like the equivalent of Cam Akers, you know, with like the offensive lines and stuff like that. And he's a guy, Reagor, that needs good quarterbacks. He's not a big catch radius guy like we were talking about with Higgins. He's an athleticism guy. So I think he's going to be a good fit there. It's just, I don't know why you would take him over superior talent, like, you know, like a guy like Lamb, who I think is going to get a lot of balls and going to score a lot of touchdowns. But anyway,
that's a good point. Yeah. It's not exactly the most ideal of landing spots either. So Philadelphia, I think, is kind of meh for him. But Izzy, what do you think about Reagor?
Oh, I think it's the best landing spot. I mean, I think it's the landing spot where they don't have Alshon, who's aging, and they have two solid tight ends and really nothing else. So if Reagor fails with Dougie P, with Carson Wentz and targets to be had, he wasn't going to succeed anywhere. So, and I'm not, if anybody knows, I'm not a Rager fan, personally. But I do like the landing spot. So I don't think he's not off my board. I think he's definitely worth a selection in this range because of the landing spot. And I get the selection over Lamb as well because Lamb's got Cooper and Gallup. And I really like Gallup and I really like Cooper. So you're dealing with mouths to feed issues. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, volume is king. And Rager should get more volume as long as he's on the field and he's developed enough to where he's going to be on the field than CeeDee Lamb is. My pick would be Judy here over Rager, but I'm just a Judy fan. So I get the pick. I don't love Rager, but I love the landing spot. So I won't hate on this at 109.
That's weird. I feel a little bit differently. I don't know about his days back in UND, but has Carson Wentz ever targeted wide receivers in an offense like heavily?
Well, it's a little different because that offense was, I mean, you're comparing apples to oranges a little bit because their level of competition was significantly less. So even if he did have multiple 1,000-yard receivers at NDSU, it's just not they just dominated.
Yep.
So I'm not worried about Carson Wentz not throwing the ball to wide receivers. I don't think they were desperate. I mean, when you're getting Greg Ward touches in playoff games, if he's getting 5-6 receptions in a playoff game, you got bigger problems. And I think Rager fills that.
I mean, even with I know Alshon's aging, but even with a healthy Alshon, it wasn't like he was getting slammed with targets. I just don't know what kind of ceiling I would expect out of a wide receiver.
Alshon's never healthy.
Yeah, that's true. That's also true. We'll see how that goes. He's all, maybe we'll rename him Carry On Jeffrey, Carry Off Jeffrey. So quickly moving on to the next one, that's Jalen Rigor. Jerry Jeudy being drafted at 110 by Dynasty Happy Hour. And Izzy, I think you agree with this pick a little bit more. You mentioned, I think Jerry Jeudy is probably your wide receiver one in this draft class, but talk to me about that pick quick.
Yeah, I love Jeudy. I love what Elway's doing to support Locke. I mean, if Locke fails at this point, he was never a lock to even be good. So I look at this and I love Sutton. I love Jeudy. I love Fant. I love that team. The issue becomes, can Locke support what they're obviously bringing in Melvin Gordon and Philip Lindsay, so there's going to be some sort of running attack there. You don't pay Melvin to pass the ball around because that's not where his juice is. That's one. Two, you have Sutton, you have Jeudy, you have Fant. Locke isn't going to be able to support all three. So somebody's taking a hit there, and it's likely all of them. So, and that takes away from Jeudy. And I don't hate the pick at 110, but I'm just not in love with this. 109, 110, 111, 112 to me is trade down city. And then you trade into the early second and you take Henry Ruggs, in my opinion, who I really like. It's just really difficult trying to figure out who the hell is going to come out on top of these and be the 1A in these offenses. Because we don't even know which one is going to be able to support multiple receivers and multiple receiving options. So it's just a little worrisome. But Judy's my wide receiver one coming out, and I'm fine with him at 110.
And Thor, CeeDee Lamb was drafted at 111 right after Jeudy, so maybe you can talk to us about Jeudy and CeeDee Lamb.
Yeah, they're very similar just in terms of talent. You know, maybe not quite the same games, but, you know, very close, like on the board and stuff like that. The reason that I prefer Lamb is because of his situation. I appreciate what Izzy said, and I agree, you know, in terms of like the talent around them. You know, obviously there's Cooper and Gallup on Dallas, but I also agree with something else that Izzy said, and I don't really believe in Drew Locke. I don't. I didn't believe in him coming out, and I still don't really believe in him. I think he has very acute accuracy issues. And during the draft, I had this running gag where when the Broncos drafted Jeudy, I said, you know, Jerry Jeudy, another receiver or another guy for Drew Locke to overthrow. And then when they drafted KJ Hamler, I said, KJ Hamler, another guy for Drew Locke to overthrow, you know, and whatever. That's my issue with that. You know, like Jeudy runs such precise routes. He's a guy where, you would prefer that he's matched up with like a super duper accurate guy. Cause he's a guy like after the catch, his body control and stuff like that is insane. He's like a yak guy. And just that match with Locke, I'm just interested to see how that goes. I'm not sure. And so just because of that, Lamb's got the better quarterback. It's going to be a better offense. And I think that Lamb might be a slightly better talent. And I like to defer to that, you know, just in like fantasy leagues, but dynasty leagues, whatever. So I think that's why I would prefer Lamb. And there's one receiver that we haven't talked about that I think from a fantasy perspective is going to be a bonanza from the start. That's a local kid.
Justin Jefferson.
Who coincidentally was drafted at 112 in this draft. So you get the honors of speaking about him. Go ahead. Continue on.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, he might not be as sexy as some of these other guys, but I think I would probably take him over Rhaegor. And I think, you know, against some of these other guys, you have to at least consider it. Because Justin Jefferson's going to get a ton of balls, and he's going to get a ton of balls immediately. He's a stud slot. Like, he's one of the best slot prospects to come into the league here these past few years. The reason that, you know, he didn't get as talked about as much as some of these other guys is because, you know, there's this perception that he's relegated to the slot, and there's a devaluation of that position to an extent. But, you know, when we're talking about fantasy, like, he's going to catch so many balls, and in PPR leagues and stuff like that, like, you know, the points are just going to be there. So I think he's going to get targeted just about as he, I mean, out of this group here, year one, certainly, I think he leads this group in targets. To me, I don't think I would be happy to make that bet. He's going to play right away, obviously. I like Jefferson a lot, and he tested well too. He tested 81st percentile. You know, last year he put up the bazooka numbers with Burrow. So anyway, I like Jefferson a lot. Like I said, I take him over Rhaegor.
Yeah, I agree with the slot versus wideout people, the conspiracies basically, and I think a lot of his value is dinged by the fact that people assume his production was linked with Joe Burrow and what Kirk Cousins and this offense that's usually a run first can do with him. But I agree. I think he's going to get opportunity right away. But Izzy, what are your thoughts? Yeah. Last guy, 112, Justin Jefferson.
Yeah, from a fantasy perspective, I can see a situation where Justin Jefferson's the most productive year one wide receiver out of the group. And you're getting Justin Jefferson at 112, 201, 202, and you're doing that because of everything falling into place correctly from a fantasy football perspective. And what I mean by that is he's falling that late for a couple of reasons. One, the other receivers were more highly touted than he was. Even if they're going to worse landing spots, they're still being drafted out of him. So I don't think you take Justin Jefferson at 109, 110, 111. I think you trade down to 112, 201, and you still get him. Another thing that's really weighing on him is that the lack of production out of the receiver position last year with Stefanski is no more. He's off to Cleveland, and now you have Gary Kubiak, who isn't going to throw the ball all over the field, but he's got a more balanced attack, and he's shown that he can carry offenses from a receiving perspective. So I like the landing spot. Thielen's aging. Justin Jefferson is going to slide in over BC. And you have a situation where Justin Jefferson could be the top guy in a year or two, and you're in an offense that's no longer purely run heavy. And I love the situation for him. I think it's fantastic, and I think you can take advantage of that at 201, 202.
I agree, and I'm less optimistic about the offense because I feel like Kubiak was mentoring Stefanski, but maybe I'm incorrect. We'll see how that goes. Thor, you get the final word, man. Final word of the show. What's your recap of all this? Maybe give me one or two of your favorite sleepers in this draft class, and then we'll move on.
Oh, it's fun to talk about it from a different perspective. You know, usually when I'm on, you know, radios or podcasts, it's just talking about the players like nuts and bolts sort of evaluation. So it's sort of fun being able, I mean, first of all, we have landing spots, and then also sort of being able to think about them in terms of their career projections within those landing spots. A first for me. So I, you know, I appreciate that. And then thinking about, you know, all these smart dudes, you know, picking them and sort of like, obviously they've thought about all of that already, which is why they did the draft. So that part of it was cool. Then as far as like, you know, guys that we hadn't hit on, you know, for people like maybe to think about as sleepers, stuff like that. One name to think about at running back would be Antonio Gibson, went to Washington, third rounder. He's not going to start out quick. He's a project type from Memphis, but he's a stud athlete. He played their H-back role that Tony Pollard used to play, and he didn't get a lot of snaps in college, didn't get a lot of touches because he was caught behind Pollard. And then a running back, they had Henderson. Like, for a G5 program, they had a ton of skill talent. But like I said, stud athlete. His dimensions are basically the same size as Ezekiel Elliott. He's 6'0", 228, tested in the 83rd percentile, and he runs angry. Like, he can't play receiver because he had a tough time picking up the playbook, which is why he didn't get more snaps or more touches, and his routes are terrible. But when you saw him get the ball in his hands, he was breaking tackles, he was running over people, and then he was, you know, running by people, and you can't catch the kid from behind. So if Washington can teach him how to play running back, and I think that's the right, converting him, that's the right thing to do. I think it's going to be easier for him to learn there, and it's going to be a quicker transition for him to the NFL, at least as far as an athletic profile standpoint. He could become an upper echelon starting running back if everything falls into place there. Just watching him run, there's only so many people that run that way, and God only makes so many people that are that big that move that way. So he'd be one guy in terms of a sleeper later on if you're starting to take flyers that I would think about. In terms of receivers, Tyler Johnson would be one, you know, going like way later on. He goes to Tampa Bay. Tyler Johnson, he got nicked. You know, we're sort of talking about Justin Jefferson. Johnson got nicked for the same things, only like way more acutely, and he got pushed way more down the board. You know, he's a fifth round guy or whatever. He doesn't have the straight line speed. He doesn't have the burst or whatever, but you know, he's another local guy for the three guys who've been talking to you for the last hour or so, here in Minnesota. He had some of the best tape as far as a slot guy and some of the best charting numbers and just counting numbers over the past 2-3 years for the Gophers. We know that he's going to be a solid slot guy in the NFL. Now, unlike Jefferson probably could swing the outside. Jefferson was a good outside receiver in 2018 at LSU. It's just they didn't throw the ball a whole lot. I don't think that Johnson's going to be able to. I just don't think he has the athleticism to play in the outside in the NFL. But I'm pretty dang sure that he's going to be able to swing playing in the slot in the NFL. He's great ball skills and stuff like that, navigating around bodies. He'll take a shot to come down with the ball. Well, obviously the quarterback he's going to be working with immediately uses slot receivers, you know, among the best, you know, of any quarterback of all time in Tom Brady. You know, he sort of made a living at that back in New England. So if Johnson can carve out a role in the slot early on, I think he could surprise people. So he would be another guy that I would look at as far as that stuff goes.
There you go. Antonio Gibson, Tyler Johnson. I love those two sleepers. Guys later in the draft could project to be much higher than what they were drafted at. So those are beautiful ones. So, and with that, we'll finish the podcast off.
Do I get sleepers?
No sleepers. No sleepers from Izzy.
Well, I will. I got to say a couple things. One, you have to draft Henry Ruggs in the second round. If Henry Ruggs is falling to your second round, you have to draft him because at some point in time, upside, this is risk reward at this point. And if you're using second round equity on a guy that has this much upside, you do it every single time. I don't care how much you dislike him. You take him. He was the first wide receiver drafted for a reason. They're going to try to utilize him. Whether he busts or not is irrelevant. Whether he's better for NFL purposes than fantasy purposes is irrelevant. You're taking pure upside with a second round pick. And you do it every day of the week. There isn't anybody that matches that upside in the second round, in my opinion. So I think that's very, very important. I have no issue fading him at 108, 109. Obviously, you guys know my love for Henry Ruggs, but I think he's an absolute steal in the second round. I think it's asinine that he's even lasting that long. And then another thing, too, is this is the wide receivers here. We need to be careful with them because we're going into a season where there's not going to be a full training camp. They're not going to learn the systems. If you're an impatient dynasty owner, you should not be drafting wide receivers, and you should be trading your draft picks. If you can't contain yourself from a patient perspective, these guys will likely struggle out of the gates, and they're not guaranteed. Just because of the historic draft class doesn't mean shit. I mean, you look at 2004 was considered the historic draft class. I think 7 wide receivers went in 2004 in the first round. like Reggie Williams, Roy Williams, Larry Fitzgerald, Rashawn Woods, Lee Evans. Who am I missing? There's another bust in there. But all these guys outside of Larry Fitzgerald, they've been very pedestrian. Those that 2004 class, and then 2016 was bust city with Corey Coleman, Josh Doctson, Laquan Treadwell, Nelson Aguilar. There's another one. I'm missing probably two more. I can't even think off the top of my head. And then the only thing that we have is 2014. So you have two out of the three last, oh my God, elite draft classes for wide receivers are littered with busts. Not even a split between some of them good, some of them bad. We're talking utter busts at these positions and heavy busts in the first round. So nothing is guaranteed at this point. So, and now we're getting shortened training camps and the whole thing. I'm just saying, be careful with the first round wide receivers. Don't think that these guys are gold. If you're going to get max value for these guys, for proven veterans that you know can help you and still have upside and still have relative youth, do it. And then be pounding the upside in the second round with these wide receivers, because that's where the risk reward really meshes.
Hurley, for people in like those crazy deep leagues, can I give like a really, really deep sleeper at positions like deeper than before?
A deep sleeper. Let's hear it. The lethargic sleeper of the day.
Yeah. So at running back, one guy to consider is Eno Benjamin, who fell all the way to the 222nd pick with Arizona. I don't know why he fell that far. He shouldn't have. A part of it, I think, was just last season, the situation he was in. Arizona State had a shitty offensive line. He was playing next to a true freshman quarterback. But the season before, he was way, way better. He's a small kid, but he breaks a lot of tackles. He's very elusive. I compared him to a kid that I loved in the last class, Devin Motor, Singletary. You know, Benjamin is a guy who catches a lot of balls and he can handle a lot of usage. He's a guy who like needs to be in a zone type system. But, you know, as far as like a one cut guy who's sort of like a Tasmanian devil type runner, I really like him. And the situation he went to, they don't got really any running backs there. Like, I don't know how you guys feel about like Kenyon Drake and Chase Edmonds or whatever, but he doesn't have like if Eno can start out quickly there, and you know he's staying home, you know, I mean, you know, going to ASU and then getting drafted by the Cardinals, he could move up that depth chart really quick. And by the way, people thought he was going to test poorly at the combine. He didn't. He tested in the 72nd percentile. So I was pretty stunned that he fell that far. And like I said, it was a nice situation for him to get in. If you can get him late, he'd be a guy to look at. One other guy, a receiver that went late, Isaiah Hodgins from Oregon State. He went in the sixth round to Buffalo, 207 overall. He was another guy who was just criminally underrated throughout his career. He was like basically Oregon State's entire offense, and they would just chuck the ball up to him. He was a highly rated recruit coming out. He was a four-star kid, and he did really, really well in college. Always, you know, he always was drawing the top, you know, corner from the other school and whatever. He doesn't drop the ball at all. He's awesome in contested situations. In terms of hands, he has probably the best set of, if he doesn't have the best set of hands, maybe he's next to Prochet, but it might be those two guys in this class. And like I said, contested catches, he's near the top. Deep ball, in terms of deep ball, he's right near the top as well. Coming into the draft process, people thought that he was going to test really poorly. He didn't. He was another guy that tested way better than we thought. He tested in the 70th percentile. So, and I thought he was going to go a little bit higher than he ended up going, but he falls to 207. I just think he was stuck in a bad situation in college. But the team he goes to the Bills. Well, you think about the Bills. They have their quarterback, he's accuracy averse, but what can he do? He can uncork the ball downfield. Well, I know that Isaiah Hodgins catches everything around him, and particularly so downfield and in contested situations. It's like the one thing, you know, those are the things that he does. So I thought that was an absolute perfect landing spot for him. And then the last position, tight end, my number one tight end in the class, fell all the way to the fourth round. Now, this isn't the best landing spot for him because this team has a bunch of tight ends. But just as far as like a talent type thing, and this guy, if you're in like crazy, crazy deep leagues that have like a bunch of taxi spots and stuff like this, take a flyer on this kid because he's way better than people think. Harrison Bryant from FAU, he ended up going 115th overall and in the fourth round to Cleveland. Cleveland's got a bunch of tight ends on their roster, but Harrison Bryant is criminally underrated. And he's a guy that plays in the slot. He can be sent down the seam. He'll be able to play more inline in the NFL as he gains weight. He's 6'5", 243. He's lacking in bulk right now, but he was actually a converted offensive lineman coming out of high school, and his blocking metric grades were really good in college. It was just like he doesn't have that bulk right now to project to play inline in the NFL, but he has the frame to project that he can add the bulk, and he certainly is willing to block. So I think, like, if you get him into your program, he adds 12, 13, 14 pounds that first year. I think you could see like a standout inline guy and a dual threat kind of a guy that can both block and catch that you can also flex out. So he's a guy that I like going for, maybe not year one, but a guy as a tight end year two, year three, year four that might return you value.
Yeah. And I'll add a couple names here quick as we go. Mid second round, I like Bryan Edwards as a target. Late second round, early third round, I think Anthony McFarland's got a great landing spot in Pittsburgh. I'd look at him late second, early third. There's three guys. I drafted 312 in this league. I took Eno Benjamin, and Joshua Kelly and Van Jefferson went 310, 311. Van Jefferson actually might be one of the more pro-ready wide receivers in the class, and he went the second round, 25th overall. So we're talking about draft capital and draft and pro-ready. Van Jefferson is wildly underrated in Dynasty right now. If you can get him with a mid-third, I would do that. Josh Kelly's got a fantastic landing spot as well with the Chargers. If he can usurp Justin Jackson, and it's just Austin Eckler there, so he could see year one production. And then I guess fourth round, I like the landing spot. Don't love the player, good at everything, kind of Swiss Army knife, not great at anything. These guys are more flip candidates. LaMichael Perrine, I don't mind him in the fourth. And then you're got, I don't love this player, but I think Bryson Hopkins with the Rams, I think is a potential long-term fit if he can develop. I think he's a late bloomer to the football game. He didn't play football his entire career. He's a converted basketball guy. He's got NFL lineage, which is good, and he's got a good long-term team for him if he can figure out some of the nuances to the position, and if he can actually start catching the ball a little bit better.
Just to that point, if Bryson Hopkins cleans up the drops, he has a really high ceiling. And I think that's the thing with Bryson Hopkins, because he has everything else. He has the athleticism. He's a really easy mover on the field, and he's explosive. That it's the one question with him. His drop rate is troubling. But if he cleans, you know, to Izzy's point, if he cleans that up, you have a really, really good move tight end. And so in that offense, he could do a ton of damage if they can just teach him to be sure-handed. You know, it's an if, but, you know, like when we're talking about deep sleepers, I mean, like, you know, all these guys have ifs, you know, that's Bryson Hopkins is, but he has every other tool in his tool belt. So,
yeah, there you have it. I think we're at a point where we have to stop. Otherwise, we're going to have to consider charging for this because we're just giving out way too much information. We want you guys to be well prepared for your drafts, but not so prepared where you'll be in drafts with us and you'll take all of our guys. So. So we're going to cut it off right there, and maybe we'll try to come back and give some more like second round visibility. Izzy, I know our intentions were to cover two rounds, but got through a first round, bunch of sleepers and some guys to watch for in the later rounds of your rookie drafts. But maybe we'll come back next week and cover the second round and go through some additional prospects as well. So thank you for tuning in. Special thank you to Thor. Again, check him out on Twitter at ThorKoo. Follow us all. The main handle for Dynasty Trade Calculators at FF Dynasty Trades. Izzy is at DTC_IzzyE, and I can be found at FF Hercules. Thank you for listening this week, you guys. Good luck in your drafts. Hopefully you get some of these guys we're talking about. We'll see you later. Bye. I'm last 101 pick. I'm bad at the bone. They mad at the domain rather than know the anatomy, though.